This is Special Report.
Black holes are one of the strangest things in existence.
Neil Armstrong may have seen extraterrestrials on the moon.
When he spies a discernible shape.
It's one small step for man. One giant leap for mankind.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there. And no one, no government agency has jurisdiction over the truth.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to Full Spectrum Universe. My name is Rob Yox. Please do us a favor. Let's wake the world up. Share this out. This stream is important. We're going to break down the essence of what is reality and what the walls of reality are using healing techniques and hypnosis. Today, my special guest is Greg Bornstein. You all know Greg. He's been around with us for quite a while now. Just to throw it up there for everybody, we have done multiple events together. He's very into hypnosis. He's a practitioner of hypnosis, as well as the host of Open Loops podcast, Conversations That Bend. So without further ado, I'm going to drop this down, bring up Greg so we can get this started.
Hey.
What's going on, brother? How are you tonight?
I am good. I am good. I am honored to be on. This is great. So much has changed since we initially, Omar said, talk to Rob, have Rob on your show. See, he's a researcher. He really knows his stuff. And, I feel like, yeah, man, I mean, I've gone so much more deeper into this than I ever imagined I would, but my life has changed so much for it. So thank you for giving me the platform to come on your show. Thank you for all the work you continue to do in this field.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. One of the things that I also wanted to catalog tonight was your awakening journey, because your awakening journey sort of started, I wouldn't say when you met us, but we expanded on it, and from there, you just went like MIA for about 6 months. And then in that time, you really honed in on what it meant to be Greg Bornstein, in the sense of internalization, figuring out the craft, getting everything set up for yourself so you can project exude this confidence that is infectious, that wakes other people up as this information goes out there. So I want to commend you, because short time I've known you, you've come such a long way in being able to delve into certain messages. And I remember when I first met you too, a lot of the stuff we talked about, you were like, well, I don't know if I really believe it,
it's good,
but I'm here to listen. So tell us first, start off from where we were back then. We did a show a very long time ago. It was a successful show. We had a follow-up show after that with a debate. It was a lot of fun. A lot of the things we talked about have now since come true. And you had a big part to play in that. I was throwing some stuff out there. It was really wild to see how the tea leaves came out after that episode. So tell us, from your perspective, what that was like.
That was kind of crazy. And it still isn't. I mean, Rob, you were telling me stuff that, you know, intel that you had about the world affairs and what was going on, evidence that the public wasn't looking at. And what do you know? There's a lot of documentation about certain world events that we're going through right now that has come out that I'm still shocked. I mean, even it was the same thing we talked about on our show, because I remember the conversation that we did have on our show was about the 2020 election and the fact that Time put out an article like right there that's like, hey, here's the shadow campaign that was going on in the background. And of course, you know, everybody's so partisan, so you're going like whichever side you're going, you're like, yeah, my shadow campaign, and the other side's like, wait, we feel like something was taken from us. And it's like, that's sort of where I'm at with cultural hypnosis. It's like these, the way we silo information in our heads to make what is fact in front of our eyes fit a predetermined narrative that we already have. I mean, screw the mainstream media for a second, or even the alternative media. What is the media playing in our inside ourselves that we're still filtering? Same way these networks do it, right? The big networks have an agenda. It's like, are people aware of their self-imposed agenda when it even comes to staring something right in the face? I know I'm already off on a loop with you, Rob, but I'll keep going for a second.
Ahead, man. I'm loving it.
Okay, one of the best things I heard recently, I was listening to an old Coast to Coast with Art Bell, who is, for people like both of us, like, this is a legend. Amazing. In this space. One of the best ever, someone that I idolize, someone I aspire to do similar work towards. He had a guy on that, and this is what I liked about Art, and this is what I tried to do on my show, and I think you do similar stuff too. People from all ends, because I remember you talking about this, like, it's the full spectrum, it's all sides, as long as you're open-minded, we'll talk to you. Art had someone on that was very scientifically based, very much more like a Neil deGrasse Tyson when it comes to UFOs, and people were calling this guy out. I think someone called in to the scientist and said to him, if you were to see a UFO right now, imagine you're out in a field and you see one of these flying saucers in front of your eyes, would you then admit that it's real? And he was like, Rob, it was crazy. I was listening to this. He could not say that he could. He was like, he wouldn't. He was like, I'd still have to look at the scientific explanation. And Art's like, so you wouldn't even believe your own eyes. And that's kind of how I feel about the stuff that you were telling me last year. That's how I feel about the stuff that comes out still and people see it right in front of them. And they go, no, wait, this doesn't fit the narrative. It doesn't fit my narrative. And it's just to be on the forefront. I suppose. I don't know if I'm really on the forefront.
You are on the forefront.
But to be out there I guess it is to challenge that, to challenge deeply held belief systems with a dedication to it. It's amazing how many people we still have to wake up. That's really what it's. And I know I'm not even fully there yet, but it's just amazing the tricks people play on themselves.
Rationalization is one of the biggest things, I think, is kind of what you're talking about, is this rationalization of how, well, if it's this, I can make the leap and say that it's that without even correlating or contextualizing what they're looking at. And this is something that we all suffer from, because when we see something that generates that kind of that endorphin level rise in us, we immediately want to co-sign from one subject to the next and kind of draw them in together. Especially being a researcher, you're looking at so many different edifices of what it is to be in that moment, you know, and trying to create that picture of it, or something that may be, you know, like comparative mythology, where we see the same figures over and over and over. Well, when you're looking at one, let's say you're looking at Rome and Greece, while they're close, they're not exactly the same. So a researcher would question that and say, well, if there are these subtle differences, what else is different? Sometimes we get in our own way and say, well, that's got to be. It's got to be. It's got to be, because it's 90% the way there. But sometimes that 10% can throw you off. And that's a self-rationalization that happens more times than not. And it's a tough thing to look at, and it's tough to frame, because we all want to be right. Your human mind wants it to be right. Like, that's it. So you'll rationalize anything and everything. And just to piggyback off the story you told, me and my fiance had an encounter with a UFO or something really high in the sky together. I'm very into this. She is not against it, but doesn't fully, you know, embrace as far as I do, I guess we could say.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I go down rabbit holes and I get really crazy. You know, she's kind of more
yeah,
of the level-headed one of the relationship. So she's, you know, the rationalization for my, you know, extreme in one direction.
Totally, and totally.
I looked at her afterwards and I said, you know what that was, right? And she says, I don't know what that was. And I was like, well, from your point of view, that makes sense. You're not, I'm sitting here thinking it's a UFO. It's got to be a UFO. Something up there. And then I also cataloged like seven planes running in triangles around that area after the fact in 20 minutes. So something strange was happening. But, you know, and I think she believes it's UFO. She's right here. She could look at me and shake her head. But, you know, I truly believe it was UFO. She looks at it as something that she can't explain. So there's the difference in rationale when you're looking at these certain subjects. And that's just a, you know, that's just a catalog to kind of give you an idea of how people see things and how different that really is.
Yeah. No, I think it's, it's very difficult to, I mean, because the thing is, like, at the end of the day, after doing all these events and conferences together, we still don't have the answers. I mean, I certainly don't. I watched a lot of the talk. I didn't watch every single talk, but I watched a lot of Humanity Unplugged, which is like 111 speakers you and Omar put together.
121. It was a
lot. Oh my gosh. It was a lot. Okay, it was even more. Yeah, it was for Watcherstock, Full Spectrum Universe put on this 7-day. I don't know. Yeah, it was just a wild conference. It was wild. Crazy.
It was 11 days.
It was 11. Days. I was going to say, oh my gosh. I can't even. Yeah.
It was that far. People left and came back at the end. They're like, you guys are still going? What is this?
Yeah.
What's happening 11, right now?
There is so much. But the thing is, like, at the end of the day, nobody, you could not, even with the hundreds of people, I mean, the experts and people who've had multiple encounters and have researched Roswell and know everything, it's still, you'll never get it. You'll never get it fully. There's this piece missing. And sometimes I wonder, Rob, if it's by design in a way, because of the way the rational, I mean, this is another thing I've been toying with, that just, I'm never, there's a place where faith comes into a lot of this. And I know that's a criticism of the movement too. I mean, you have like the skeptics, like Michael Shermer, who, I mean, this is a guy, Skeptic Magazine. I used to, when I was like really into the opposite side and all atheist, all debunking, Michael Shermer, James Randi, these were the people that were out there going, it sounds like the UFO people are a lot like the religion people. They're just swapping in ETs for religion. It makes sense from a distance. That argument makes sense. But then you actually like look at the rocks and you look at the stories and you look at the work of Paul Anthony Wallace and you look at that guy, whatever his name is that I know Paul has talked with, who wrote the Naked Bible, the translator, the Vatican translator.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah.
That guy who's like starting to get a lot of like play. They're just things that if somebody that translates for the Vatican and Paul Anthony Wallace and cultures all over the world, the Hopi, the Aztecs, the Maya, if there are things that talk about star people more than there are that talk about one monotheistic God, then why are we ignoring it? This is our history. This is our history. So that's where I'm like a little more, you know, it in some ways, I think people, I don't even know what my point was. I guess my point was, at some level, you do have to, you're not going to get all faith. The answers, but you do have to have faith in some direction that is a little more at least supported by, yeah, look at history too. It's a lot of the most faithful people are some of the most closed-minded people, the faithful people. It's like there's old faith and there's new faith in a way. But I think one of the things in my journey through all this, this awakening journey, is the idea that at a certain point you have to make a choice to not know and feel into the reality. That's kind of one of the biggest things I've learned.
Got to be okay with it. You got to be okay with not knowing. And just to piggyback off what you're saying is, when I look, this is my method, right? So if I look at something like the Bible, they're talking about their encounter with consciousness and trying to explain consciousness, experience, emotion, just like everything else. And let's say that, you know, the old ways of the ancient Native Americans, when they saw these star people, they were possibly behind that veil, or extra dimensional, ultra dimensional, but it was still their consciousness that was at a certain level that gave them the ability to see that. So is everything based off consciousness, or is there actual contact happening in the sense of, you know,
that's a great question.
Is it your higher self, and you're channeling your higher self, which in turn lets you see the next dimensional reality, which in turn gives you these extra dimensional beings or entities? Is it actual physical beings coming down, or is everything just a playoff source? Is everything just that funnel off of source? And this is kind of where I get convoluted, because I was raised Roman Catholic. I believe in the Roman Catholic God. I do. But is my interpretation, as I call him God, is that source for you? Is that Yahweh for you? Is that an extra dimensional being that was possibly a hybrid, ET? It could be all of those. And it probably is all of those. You know, and that's kind of like where my fluidity comes in, I guess, is kind of, you know, learning from that. But I really do think that all of it is that all of these ancient texts are trying to explain the flux of awareness that comes when consciousness is introduced and you recognize it as consciousness.
Yes, that is so good. That's so true. I mean, I talk about this all the time. When I have somebody that's a star seed or walk-ins, right? People that come to this earth and they realize they're not from here. And oftentimes there's a correlation between the star seeds and talking about consciousness in general. And I didn't even realize this was a thing. Like my introduction to this entire, and really my going down the rabbit hole of extraterrestrials, was after watching the Stephen Greer documentary Unacknowledged. Probably watched it like 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, look, I know people have thoughts on Stephen Greer. I know some people think he's part of the dark side, the other side. But one thing that he did say that I got from that feels right, and I think I hear it throughout all the UFO, at least the UFO community, that resonates with me, what I feel, because at the end of the day, all we really have is like what feels true, and that's also what this stuff is pointing you towards. It's pointing you towards source, and the source inside yourself, really, is what I mean by that. The thing that he said is that, yeah, they don't want to show up here because everybody's being mean to each other. And that to me was like, oh, wait a minute. ETs as an extension of the highest version of our consciousness and enlightenment. They want us to be peaceful. And that's something I hear all the time. I mean, we hear it. We are the people that we, Sol Rita is the person that comes to mind. These great figures in the UFO ET community that talk about their gifts, and they relay messages from the past and from the present off planet. It's always a message of peace, warmth, love, restoring us. There's this divine nature. It's a loving one. It's a caring one. And that to me feels like a very, I guess what I was going to say is that I didn't realize that it just wasn't spaceships and abducting. I didn't realize that this whole thing is a call to a higher level of consciousness. And there's still gaps there too. I mean, I don't know like exactly why me seeing something in the sky that I don't recognize and then it fading away instantly is necessarily related to me going into an altered state of mind or up-leveling my consciousness. I could tell you a theory about it. I could tell you many theories about it. We both know people, we've had people on that talk about it, but I do feel that at the end of the day, there is, it is part of this spiritual, it's a spiritual thing. I didn't realize UFOs were so spiritual, and that's definitely been a big piece of this for me.
That's incredible. And, you know, I kind of had that awakening when I was on a panel, when I explained what I just told you about, you know, me and my fiance being encountering something. Alan asked me a question. He says, do you think possibly that you manifested that? And I looked at him and I was like, that makes so much sense. How long have I wanted my significant other to, and I don't talk about her a lot on the air because, you know, I don't want to, you know, everybody knows who she is.
Of course. But
I don't say names and things like that because to protect her identity and things like that. People see this all around the world. But, you know, I thought about it and I said, how long have I wanted her to see something or at least experience something in that way to kind of thrust her into that type of life where she knows that there's more out there? Not that she doesn't, but kind of that solidifying factor. And even for myself, that was literally my first encounter, and it was together, which was really wild. So I've talked to so many different people about encounters, could catalog encounters through emotion and everything else of it. That's fine. But we had that experience together, which is super special because two people saw it, not just one, which is a group kind of encounter. Second, maybe I did do that. And it was 2 weeks before the disclosure event that me and Omar did. And then I had another experience 2 weeks after that, and that was by myself. Which was in a different state, but the same type of thing. And it was really wild. But, you know, and Alan's like, maybe you manifested that because you wanted her to understand you more. And I was like,
yeah,
it makes so much sense, bro. Like, that makes so much sense. And now I'm under the impression that I probably did. I probably did do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. That's very interesting. I also think, though, you know, it's intriguing because did you manifest it, but it sounds like you didn't need her to believe it either. Like, it sounds like it came of a non-attached place. You wanted it, but you didn't need it. Yeah, that's one of the things that I think some people, I mean, that is one of the problems. And I know that there's a good friend of ours. I've talked to her about this off the air, actually, that like so wanted someone in her life to understand this stuff. And I'm going, yo, the more you want that, the less it's going to happen. The more you put your agenda on it. There's a certain point.
You're not going to get the right one. You're going to get the wrong one for that.
Right. And it's those moments where you kind of like sit back and all of a sudden, boom, there's UFO there. It's like, oh, I really want that. And yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting push-pull because, yeah, I certainly know I'm not going to convert everybody. But that said, you tell people you do a podcast about this stuff and there are a lot more people interested than there are just thinking it's complete. And it's not even like some people, you know, will be like, oh, are they all crazy people you have on your show? Yeah, I get that. I get that. And then, if you really listen to people, it just does not. Well, that would mean that there would have to be so many delusional people who that's a phenomenon for so many people to experience the same stuff. Explain that. That's a miracle. Yeah. So it's this stuff is it's ripe. And, you know, between you and Omar and everybody else out there who's saying it, like, you can feel that next week now what is that, the House committee, or so they're going to do a talk about UAPs to the public. Not sure
that we're going to get some. It's not going to be.
I don't think we're going to get anything good there, though, unfortunately.
But you know, but, one of the things about this too is that so people walk alone, and that it's in this truth of their own for so long that when they kind of come into a community, it's like almost sensory overload at first, and some tend to pull back, but some embrace it so much that it's like, it's that fresh air that they need to just be like, you know what? Like, now I can truly explore this further because there's like-minded people who will understand my position, and I don't have to cower in that closed off sense, you know?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And I do think, you know, say what you will about what happened, but it is the past couple years have been a time where people who were on the fringes have really, it's just right there. It's no denying it. It's right there. And everybody's like, you know, people are lying. People, you see the lying. You can catch a lie quicker, and everyone sees that. And what's the crazy thing about all of it, to me at least, and I think, like, why, if you're going to dehypnotize yourself from the cultural, I mean, I call myself on my show a cultural hypnotist, but I feel like I have to call myself that because there's so much culture is hypnotizing everybody in whatever direction someone with an agenda wants. Therefore, I need to, like, go in people's minds, and you listen to this show and you're going to hear someone with a different perspective, and hopefully that's going to allow you to focus on something else, a different thought stream, a different narrative, a different reality tunnel, so that you're able to expand beyond the cultural hypnosis they're putting you in. But I think, honestly, sometimes you have to just, because no one's accountable, this is what I was going to say, because no one is ever going to be accountable if it doesn't fit their agenda, you have to kind of turn off TV, people. Yeah, you actually have to get outside and get with nature. You have to turn off the internet at times. I mean, I know it's hard for us to do that because we're out there doing this content, but there is just no way you're all ever, there's just no way to make it through, because here's, and this is the thing I see a lot in this community, there's like the mainstream narrative, someone says this feels fishy, then things are revealed to be fishy, and then everybody just gets angry at the fishiness, and then it's like, well, no one takes accountability, so it's almost like you're kind of like internalizing the distrust and the betrayal, and then there's like another thing, and it's, I think it's tough. It's tough for me, someone that is conspiracy curious, and somebody that does want to know what's going on with Ghislaine and the trial and all this stuff. Like, I am sitting here being like, that makes me mad that they're not revealing what's really going on and what are they protecting and da 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 da. But also, if you have so much of that bubbling up inside, Rob, it's like, then you can't ever experience life fully, because then you're like, the agendas are still going through your head. We know they're lying, but it's still circulating in our consciousness. So what's very tough is to that transition, I think, between doing the research and digging yourself into the alternative and what's true and not identifying with it, so that you can actually experience a joyful life. Otherwise, you're just going to be angry forever. I don't know what your experience has been with that, but like, I know I could spend all night being upset if I was on Rumble and just going after video.
Oh yeah. you know that disassociation is truly something that takes practice. It's almost like you kind of have to program your subconscious to be able to stop staring at the abyss, because that's what I say, you stare at the abyss, eventually you become the abyss and it's enveloped you. But one of the things that I think also goes into the spirituality side of it and that consciousness side of it is that being able to internalize it and say, okay, well, now I have to live in the now to make that difference. If I keep staring at that for too long without figuring out some either sort of solution, or now I have to, and this is why I tell a lot of people, do your own show. Everybody do your own show. This is what we want to happen, because everybody out there saying those narratives, you've done your job. You've put it out there. Now you have to let it go. Yeah. Now, when you something else comes up, you revisit it, you grab it again, you explain it again, and then you go that step further, and then you let it go again. Because if you hold on to it and it stays inside of you, you're going to have no hair. You're going to be 700 pounds. You're going to be, you know, have right. a heart attack by the age of 34. Your cholesterol is going to be through the roof. You're going to have diabetes, all that. That's totally. Why, you know, and something I'm working on for a week's kind of like week's shows is, how do we really fine tune our physical, and then our spiritual will be the next week, so we can get the full modality of, you know, eat right, exercise, keep the body and your vessel healthy. Therefore, when you hit that spiritual information, you're able to not have those adverse effects in that way, and you can carry a little bit more of that information and that weight, because it is all congruent. It all works together. The inside, the outside, everything's together. And like, you know, we always say there's millions of roads, or millions of paths to the one road. And that one road goes back to the internal. So you have to take care of your interior, your exterior, your mental, all of that is important. So I feel like a lot of times we talk about that mental. A lot of times we talk about that spiritual. How often do we talk about that physical, the diet, making sure you eat right, making sure you exercise the right way, making sure you're doing your conscious breathing properly? That stuff is equally as important. It's that duality that we all live by. So it's funny. That duality is in everything. It's in everything.
I was going to say, you're sounding like our friend Jerome now. He is like our friend Jerome Calver.
Do what you do. Love what you do.
Yes. Do what you love. Love what you do. I mean, yeah, he is Jerome Calver of Present Time Alignment. He is always talking about sources of energy. And I mean, look, talking about the, you know, stuff that we know, the first language is energy, and how it can be you. Alignment isn't just being like, I know this for myself, and I could be even better in my personal life with diet and exercise and stuff. Oh, I know too. I could me be, but I know that one level of alignment is going like, okay, I like these topics. I feel like I like creating. Therefore, I'm going to go out there and broadcast about these topics. And that's like mental alignment, but your body still exists. There are spiritual things that exist. There's a holistic alignment that I think you're absolutely right, Rob. And I look forward to those events because, there is a stereotype and a trope of the tinfoil hat guy that I'm afraid of sometimes. Like, there's so many forums out there. There's so many articles. I mean, you could spend the rest of your life. Does everybody out there realize you could spend the rest of your life on the internet and go down a rabbit hole for one thing? I have time travelers all the time on my show. I go down the time travel tube. There is so much about time travel. There's so many different names. I'm so interested in it. There are different angles. But you gotta... It's like what you were saying. You have to take care of yourself too in it. Do not lose yourself to the intellectual pursuits. Do not go out and see people, socialize. You have to have, and it's tough because my rational mind sometimes doesn't want to do it. And I know it's an irrational thought. My brain goes like, no, you love these topics. You'll enjoy them forever. But it's kind of like eating too much chocolate.
Oh yeah.
It's like you get sick of it after a while. And I've been in business where like, I'm going to read all day, and I start reading and it's like 2 hours in and I'm like, oh crap, I really need somebody to talk to, I think. So it's like the body does have its natural ways of doing that. But I guess the key point would be like, listen to yourself more. And all this, listen to your internal intuition. If it's telling you should probably call someone or spend time with family or follow that. Now, that said, to get there, requires a lot of deprogramming sometimes. And that's one of the other things about my awakening in all of this, is that I also didn't realize, amidst all the UFOs, flying saucers, psychics, paranormal, all this other stuff, is that there really is a call for, and I saw some people in the comments post about this, there is a call for you to self-express from a very pure place in all of this. I didn't realize how much spirituality could feel good, because it's you being you. And yeah, I think that's an amazing piece of all of this. I think when we're talking about like breaking down the system and you know, and there's a matrix and all this stuff, it's so, I mean, it's like, just read one of David Icke's books. And the last chapter, I mean, you know, he talks about the phantom self and all this stuff. It's like he pounds you with like alternative history and all this stuff and stuff about politics and blah blah blah, and then you get to the last chapter where he's like, and really this is all about yourself and self-expression and you being free in the world. I'm like, whoa, yeah, I see why you had to structure this book this way, because there's so many layers to seeing who yourself is. And once you see how many lies there are around you, you realize how much of a waste of your life it is if you aren't expressing yourself. That in itself is spiritual. Self-expression is a high spiritual act. Did not know that before I started this podcast, and I'm happy people like you have led me to places where I feel that's so much more of a possibility in my life.
Of course. And you know, just hearing you say that is amazing, because even down the road, when you've done all of it for a while, you forget that it's about just being you and accepting who you are. And therefore, you know, I don't even know what, I'm not even going to therefore it, because that is the ultimate goal, is to just resonate in that space. And it's infectious. People see it and they say, I want to resonate in that space. That space seems energetic. It seems fun. It's filled with love. There's no misconceptions. Everything is what it is. If you know, and this is kind of like where me and Omar's relationship is really great. We see eye to eye on so much stuff, but we also feel that iron sharpens iron. And when we don't agree, we express that disagreement in a way that the other person goes, well, I can see why you would feel that. And it turns into these conversations that are just so off the charts. So off the charts, because we explore it. Why? How? Well, maybe this, maybe that. Could be. Who knows? But in that time and expressing, there is a lot that goes on between the giving and the taking, and being that listener and that student, but also being the teacher at the same time and kind of giving your perspective. And that, when those perspectives get held in, it causes emotional repercussions.
Yes.
And those emotional repercussions become physical repercussions. And then those physical repercussions manifest to other people around you and get projected. So it's a vicious, vicious cycle. And understanding a little bit of that, you can kind of remove it and take yourself out of those areas and kind of take a step back and be like, well, where am I screwing this up? Where am I not doing this properly? And that was a huge step for me, because now my authentic self is 100% 24 hours a day, 7 days, 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, even beyond, you know, my wake time. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is what I love always about, and I feel that sometimes hypnosis is key. What I love when I see some people look at a stage hypnosis show, and this is what intrigued me about it. I saw stage hypnotists come to my high school, and I'd always heard about it, but for me to be, I mean, this is my first, whoa, this feels like a paranormal experience to me, because it was me and very small group, 4 or 5 people on stage that night, including one of my best friends from high school. She was on the stage. This guy would say something, and all of a sudden they'd be doing outlandish acts, come up with the wittiest answers to questions, just do things that seemed out of the ordinary. But the key is, Rob, It was uninhibited. It was uninhibited. And that's something hypnosis practitioners have said forever. It's when you get people into a place where they're accessing their most creative self, they're and these are all metaphors, but their right brain, their unconscious mind, the place where really their conscious mind connects with their unconscious mind. You are in a really, it's why people do drugs, honestly. It's why hypnosis is the cheaper option. So people can just express, it's pure expression. And I have to tell you, that weird thing you're thinking in your head that you don't say when you're out with friends is probably the thing everybody wants. I'm going to tell you right now, it's what we want to hear. That weird thought you censored, that offensive perspective, that quip, that thing that you're ashamed of. And I'm still growing in this in myself, but I'm going to tell you right now that that's what the world wants. It's what we want, because more than think about it on a grandiose scale, like it reminds me of what Stephen and Evan talk about, you know, Stephen and Evan Strong. Stephen talks about this idea that, you know, well, if we evolved from apes, then why do we all have these unique faces and characteristics? Why don't we look, why does every human look different? How do you explain that? How does everybody have a unique shape? And I think that's the same with expression too. And that's what I'm hoping is happening with these times, Rob. It's like, to just be someone that does a job that some corporate entity CEO created, and then follow these roles, and this is how you're a good employee, and this is how you do things, and da 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 da. It's not interesting. it's not evolved in a way. It's keeping people stagnant, and that's why we have a special place in our heart for the artists. The more you can live life like art, every moment, every sentence is a new self-expression. Even if you're ashamed and you feel like you might be a fool, getting over that shame is such a gift, to be able to speak what's really in your head and communicate that full essence of you. It's what the world needs it. I need it. I want to hear it, because that to me is what's so interesting about communication, the way it takes different forms. So yeah, I think it's a huge part of this, and I'm leaning much more into my self-expression as I continue to do this project. And I think that's what you mean by have your own show. It's like, yeah, have it, speak, get on Facebook every day and speak what's inside, because guarantee somebody else will resonate and be so thankful that you did.
That is the ultimate goal, and this is how we exponentially wake people up. That's why when I come in, I say, share this out. While people may enjoy it, they may not. They see two gentlemen speaking to each other unabated and without the programming of what everybody else is thinking or saying, and that in itself is powerful. We're being programmed, like you said, culturally at every avenue. We're all special. We have to stand in that special, enjoy it, embrace it, and let it out for others, because then other people will feel that warmth and that love. And that's kind of what it means to be in the love and the light, right? Love and light. You receive it, you pass it on. And that's how we live. Hopefully it's our mantra, in that sense that we put it out there for everybody else to take in and digest. And, you know, even like tonight, this show didn't really have parameters. We're just talking. Like, this is what we do. Me and Greg have these conversations, and sometimes it's in the middle of an event. We'll just start talking, yeah, and there'll be a guest there. Regardless, it's all about being able to express that, like you said, that one thing that you think people are going to judge you on. And when you get it out and they don't judge you and they say, that's awesome, do it again. It's like, it becomes empowering, and we're all empowered, and we're all out there to transcend those little programs, those little, you know, those little quips and all that stuff. It's so much bigger than that. We're on such a bigger scale now. We have to understand that. But the long game is equally as important as the short game. So each day should feel that way. And then the entirety of it will feel that way. Like, it's there is a lot of people, they like to hone in on specific things and kind of stay hyper-focused. You've got to pull back. You got to come back out a little bit. Check it all out, because there's a lot more to be learned from all of it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I some of the people that I thought would be the most interesting interviews of my guests were the people that I wasn't interested and vice versa. Some people I'm like, okay, you do this kind of healing modality. How much depth is there in that? Oh, wait, your life story. Oh, wait, this happened because of this? Oh, there's a cultural history? Oh, and you have such a unique relationship to... I mean, that's... yeah, it's that ever-curious mindset that is something to... I think it's great. It's a great exercise. Next time you're in a conversation with someone and you're talking about something... can you go a level deeper in the conversation? Can you say, you know, yeah, and what drives you? What motivates you to want to study this field? You know, like, what would you like to accomplish in it? You will start getting, you will feel more connected to others. That's another thing our friend Jerome Calver extols about, and I'm a big fan of. I mean, it's all about values work, values, finding your values. A lot of people talk about it, but I think in general, we're moving to a place where, because values are connected to that innermost being, your heart, what drives you. That's why everybody got up and left their jobs. Didn't align with your values. Every bit, why is there so much stuff about, I mean, there's stuff about diversity. Sure, there's stuff about sustainability out there. There's a lot of people right now. Now, I will, of course, there's like virtue signaling, which is interesting because this is where, and that's the tricky thing with the media and these big agendas, right? Like, some of these people will impose values. I have done one of my part-time gigs is I do these murder mystery shows.
Oh, that's awesome.
I live perform, and I love live performing all around in the tri-state area. And it's so interesting because different generate, like if you were in one lane of the world, like politically correct humor, humor is something I like very much. I'm like, oh, why do they censor comedians? For a little while there, it's changed a bit now, I think, because of the lockdown situation and people just getting out there. But before that, like among late 20s to 30s, you could not even hint at any trace of sexuality among that group without people feeling uncomfortable. And it's just, it made me go like, whoa, I don't think there's anything predatory about this kind of joke. I don't think there's anything like horrible, but the idea of just even bringing up an inference of attraction would cause people to be uncomfortable in my generation. But then you go out further out and you get to like 50s and 60s. They didn't care at all. As a matter of fact, there were a lot more people that didn't care than people that we were told by the media did. And that's what we hear a lot, that like, you can't say this anymore. You can't say this. Cancel culture. It's like, it's such a virus. It's interesting. It's a hypnotic word. It's like, I'm sure somebody else has thought of this before me, but it's like cancel culture is canceling culture.
Literally.
Because guess what? Yes, it is. I mean, and it's ridiculous to me that somehow so few voices have spoken up for the majority. It's because the majority actually doesn't really care about a lot of this stuff. They miss their comedians. They miss you know, edginess. But the idea that somehow things have been shaped in this really grotesque way, so that, you know, the people that used to tout freedom of speech are the people that seem to be the most against it. I'm just sitting here going like, oh, where is our community? Where are the people being people and themselves? Because I do not, the idea that I can't be in a room with a group of people where they're fully able to express what's in their heads is just so it's sad, man. It's like it's like an inner turmoil.
It's dampening. It's dampening to the mood. And I agree with you 100%. That's like what my first book is kind of going to be on. It's on the essence of community and when we lost community. And we see that with them, you know, using governmental bodies to create things like the Ministry of Truth, which is the war for your mind. It's a war on for your mind. They want you to think what they want you to think, and you're going to think it. Otherwise, you're going to be held in contempt of some way. And then, you know, I used to love edgy comedians, and art is supposed to push the envelope, regardless of what it is. Books, music, film, it's supposed to push. This is how we explore the entirety of what humanity really is, by finding those boundaries, sometimes going a little over and coming back. But you're right. When everything becomes offensive, then you're literally always mad. And when you're always mad, that distills a state of fear, because you know, there's always something new to get, you know, get angry at. And this is that lowering of the frequency that's programmed and generically done. And they have other programs where they go even further. And that virtue signal is essentially a way for somebody who feels really crappy about themselves to say, hey, look, I did it. So now I've got your permission to feel good.
And that's so true. Yeah.
That's where it's over. It's over in those moments.
That's what's messed up about it. You know what, Rob, until you said that, I never thought about it this way. That virtue signaling gives the power of validation to the other. That's it. And again, that's not to say that some of these causes aren't justified. Look, I believe in equal rights. You know, I believe that people deserve a fair chance. And in my heart, I do. But I don't believe I should have to display it for the other's approval to validate that I'm a good human being, because then it's giving away my self-will, my self-love to some other outside thing. So yeah, when we're talking about like spirituality, I don't see how virtue signaling activities connect to, I don't think they connect to it at all, because it's not the real self coming through most of the time. It's from an agenda. So yeah, that is something. Dehypnotize yourself about that. And also the thing I wanted to circle back on from the hypnosis perspective is what you were talking about getting angry. People don't realize that I use the word hypnosis, and I know I did a presentation about this, actually, one of the conferences about like trance versus hypnosis. In different contexts, I like to play with the term, because I think that trance, which is related to hypnosis, is, sorry, folks, you're always quote unquote in trance. And people say that love is one of the greatest trances, but also anger. And here's the proof. It's what we were talking about before with the conspiracy, the like looking at the fringe rabbit holes. You see one thing, and then all of a sudden your brain is able to slowly, oh, you know what? There's another thing I'm angry about now. And then this thing makes me angry. And it's that selective focus on one thing that your brain wraps its mind around that then allows you to feel something different in that context. That's totally hypnosis. People do it all the time to themselves. They get trapped. And that's why, you know, you have to, in conversation, you have to, if you're in a fight with someone, it really takes almost like it's a true heroic act in a way for somebody who's catching them. Maybe you're in a fight with a significant other, for one person to go, wait a minute. Let's pause. Clearly, you know, we're both escalating this. Let's take a step back and examine this later from a different place, a different trance, a more constructive, like you and Omar. You know, it's otherwise, it feeds off of each other, like in the same way you were talking about internally projecting onto society and that growing. It's like you at a certain point you have to take a stand to end your negative trance in the moment to get to a more productive place. If people could do that more or and it really, I guess what I'm really coming down to is emotional awareness, developing more emotional awareness, consciously cultivating that, I think is a key here towards getting to that higher self-expression place and that higher state of consciousness that'll benefit everybody.
That also comes to with teaching others about this sort of lifestyle too, because a lot of that pushback is an emotional reaction, a visceral response. Like you can't be saying that to me right now, but you're like, well, wait a minute. This isn't meant to be that way. This is meant for me to just kind of, you know, let you think about it. I'm just approaching it or maybe questioning something. It's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I one of the things that I've tried to do and with emotional awareness is keeping like a close eye on my thoughts to keep them positive. And while some people say, you know, it seems like sometimes you don't have any emotion, and it's not that, I'm gauging what I let my responses be and kind of not letting myself get wrapped up in that side of it, because I don't want to feel that negative. So really evaluating, is it worth me saying what I'm about to say, or is there a better way for me to describe it to somebody else without that inflection in it, and kind of just approach it from a more logical standpoint? Now, it's good and it's bad, because I think it takes away a little bit of the emotional, the emotional edge to it. But when it comes to like an argument style, like and this is where I've kind of like drawn the dichotomy or like the duality of it. It's good in some instances, but not all. But during an argument, that's the best way for me to approach it, because I really do have a temper that can go way off the handle if I don't hold it in. And I don't know why that is, but it's not like in a way that's like, you know, abusive in any way. But I get really mad, and then that madness gets stuffed down inside of myself, and that again isn't healthy. I'm putting strain on my vessel, on my meat suit. And eventually, it's gonna go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's very intense. I mean, where anger is, I would not call myself. Yeah, I've not really done a lot of work, deep like anger work, and studied it too much in hypnosis. I know there's a lot of there are a lot of different interventions for it. I mean, it's believe me, I even knowing from being in relationships with people, friends, family, lovers, like I know that having somebody that is prone to get angry quickly, you can't just be like, hey, change your perspective on this, because it is something in themselves that, you know, I saw someone in the chat talk about triggers. And it's one of those, and I think it's, oh gosh. Okay. Yeah. I think triggers is someone in the chat said it can immediately be undone by puppies and kittens. In a weird way. I mean, it can't necessarily, but that said, the principle of it is consciously diverting your attention to something to disrupt the trigger. So that is actually something that you could do, at least as you're experiencing. I mean, so, you know, look, there are more people that are clinically trained in this than I am, but people talk about like going inside and feeling it and just letting yourself feel the feeling of it without expressing and just letting it melt through. That's one way to deal with it. That's more of a meditative technique. But also in general, I mean, and this is why Tony Robbins is a master at what he does. And I think he's a very skilled hypnotist, is that like he'll have people come, they want to commit suicide, and then he'll be like, and why are you, look at these ugly shoes this guy's wearing. And all of a sudden, boom, pattern interrupt. And then it's like, what? Their brain actually scrambles in that way, because it's outside of the emotion. It's outside of the state. So it can temporarily disrupt it. So in a weird way, Rob, I mean, look, I'm not prescribing you anger advice here, but if there are things that you can quickly, like an activity that you enjoyed, you're like, I feel the anger, but let me get to an activity that I enjoy that can put at least a pause between you and the state as you're processing it before, like, expressing what you actually need in that. Yeah, I see a lot of people talking about researcher stuff in there. Our good friend talking about transmuting anger into calmness. Yeah, that's sort of what I'm talking about. It's if there's anything I've learned, it's to let these things go through you.
I do that. I'll yell, like, at something else very quickly. Like, if it gets that heated, I'll be like, you know, I'll just turn, not facing the person. I just, like, yell at something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm good now. Like, I've released it. It's gone. Like, I've handled it. It's over. It's over now. And then I can come back and be, you know, calm, cool, collected, and kind of, like, emotionless, and really see what, you know, I've done a lot to not get to those stages anymore. So when it does happen, it's very rare now. But from back in the day, oh my God, I was always angry at something or somebody. I used to be like the, you know, I don't want to say drama king, but like I really was. Like, I just loved it. Loved to stir in that and that negative.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh my God, I couldn't be so opposite from that now. It's wild. But I definitely was that person who wallowed in that negative for quite a while. And it took a while for me to correct that. Because even after the awakening process, I still had lingering trails of that person. And I had to kind of, you know, reevaluate if I truly wanted to be that person anymore, or, you know, have that inflection inside of myself, which I ultimately did not. And, you know, I've kind of gotten, you know, around it now, in the sense of it doesn't come up ever. But when it does, I know how to kind of transmute that and get it away, and it's over.
Yeah. 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 No. And it's, I think you're absolutely right about, you know, that's where people in general, if there's anything I've learned throughout all this, it's that, if something triggers you, and even that word to me is, I think, stupid, because I shouldn't say such spiritually low things, but I don't think trigger is a great word, just because it diminishes the emotion that's actually wanting to get out or get realized, balanced by the universe. But I, because we all are using it culturally here, it's been culturally hypnotized into us. When something someone says or does triggers you, that's a great indication that there's inner work to be done still. And it's not a bad, you know, I mean, people say like, oh, you said that triggered me. But I would, I know for myself that it definitely calls me to do more self-examination when someone says something like that, because sometimes I like it, which is the sick part of me. Maybe it's my Jewish lineage that appreciates the punishment. I don't know. Self-punishment maybe, but yes, exactly. I don't know.
Edgy jokes. There it is.
Get him kicked off. No, but yes, there is something about that feeling into, I don't know, maybe it is weird in a weird way. When someone says something to me that hits so hard and so real, I embrace it. And while it does hurt, I'm like, maybe it's my way of moving through things and understanding and processing it. Because I appreciate the rawness. Like, I have so little time on this planet. Why hold it back with just like, oh, no, you're great, you're doing well. It's like, no, but what about this thing about money that this trigger you have, that you should be making more money and you're not making enough? It's like, oh, whoa. Okay, let's examine that more. Let's dig that more. Because what it comes down to, Rob, with all the spiritual stuff, and this goes back to self-expression, this goes back to the ability to have these extrasensory perceptions and the magic in this world that's been covered up, and the ability. I mean, I think a UFO is like the perfect, this like propulsion system that we can't explain that flies through the air and does these miraculous things. I love using this stuff in hypnosis as a metaphor because it's the perfect encapsulation of where the human spirit wants to go. We are trying to fly. We all want to get out of here. We all want to, we know, and not get out of here, but we just want to be up in the air and see it all. That's the ultimate view, to be in a flying saucer and look down over everything and go through galaxies, to have that unabashed ability to just explore through the world without anything holding you down. That at the core is what I believe most humans want. Therefore, if you have a trigger, there's still something weighing you down. So it's worth working with someone like me that's a hypnotherapist, or working with a counselor, anybody, any healers, people who can work with you to overcome those bonds, because chances are, if something does bring up emotions in you that aren't productive, you're not living your easiest, most free life. And lucky enough, you have people out there that are dedicating themselves to sharing ideas that inspire, like yourself, that inspire people to get there. Workers that are working with the unconscious mind to set people's limitations to melt them away. And I think it's a very important time for people to do this work. Because, we all could fly metaphorically and perhaps even literally if we really did that inner examination.
What a statement to end this show on. I think right there is the cut point, because you hit that so on the money right there. That was so true. You know, to learn to fly is the ultimate goal. And metaphorically and physically, you need to loosen all of those rocks that are literally strung up around your belt. And the more you let each one go, the further up you go. So, you know, with that being said, Greg Bornstein, I've put all of Greg's website and his YouTube, go and subscribe in the chat while we're doing it. It is in the description. Greg, final words before we shut this bad boy down.
Oh my gosh. Love. That's just the word it all comes back to. And you know what? I Jerome Calver said to me once, he's like, Greg, what is your highest purpose? And he talked to the spirit and he said, Greg, I think you're teaching people how to love. And I don't fully embody it yet, but it's still,
there you do.
Maybe I do. Maybe I'm becoming more consciously aware of it by the second. So I'm grateful for you for giving me this platform. Again, like I said, I'm grateful for all of you, and I appreciate the community, because at the end of the day, at the core of it seems to be this desire to love each other better. And it's hippy dippy, but you know what? I'm gonna lean in. We all want to be out there having fun in this world. So why deny yourself that joy?
Lean in, brother, because I'm going to lean right in there with you. And it's always an honor and a privilege to have you on here, bro. I love you to death. We're going to do so much more work in the future. We have it. It's written in the stars. And guys, please share out this conversation. To me, this was a conversation that bent just like open.
Yes.
Loop, and we went everywhere. Also, it's an exploration into our heads and what we really feel is, you know, unadulterated us. This was our programming being thrown out there and saying, this is who we are, take it or leave it. So with that being said, thank you everybody for joining us tonight. I'm Rob Yox. That's Greg Bornstein. This was Full Spectrum Universe. We are out of here.